3-week series from me on a pastoral word. We're thinking about a range of issues, particularly thinking about issues that are facing us as a church family, and really thinking about the issues facing us as a church family, particularly with the building that we're doing and the building move that we're doing. We began this series last week thinking about that grand statement from Jesus, "I will build my church," and what that means, that Jesus is building his church. He's not talking about bricks and mortar building. He's talking about building people who know and love and trust him and recognize him as the Christ. And then we saw at the end of the talk last week that statement in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, always give yourself fully to the work of the Lord. And we're to play a part in Jesus' work, which is building a church. And we're going to be looking at that from all sorts of different angles over the next few months. And so I know that Sam Russell's got a series coming up in a month or so's time, and he's going to be particularly taking us to the churches in the first few chapters of the book of Revelation, and that's going to be very interesting to see Sam unpack chapters 1 to 3 of Revelation. Lady is going to open up for us Philippians. Matt's going to be speaking on John's Gospel, and so a range of things where we'll be tackling that, but I'm today going to look at really the nitty-gritty and the boring bits, the rosters, the accounts, the setup, the pack up, the organizing for supper, the packing up at the end, the stuff that has to happen, that's the mundane, that's essential, that really we've got problems if it doesn't happen. I asked you last week as we got underway in this series and first night out of our long-term venue to voice any concerns that you might have and also sort of what problems you saw, what concerns that you saw that we might have, and also how whether or not you were able to play a part in solving that problem. And I want to say I and the leaders of the church were very, very impressed as we went through the comment cards during the week, overwhelmingly impressed and delighted by your response. Just to give you a few of them, church is not a building, it's people. I hope we don't lose any while we're homeless. I do like the carpeted room for creche, and we'll help pack up creche. Somebody from the morning church there, fringe people getting lost, that's a concern. Another one, my concern is parking in Johnson Street is difficult. I had to park off a side street and I'm slightly nervous about walking in the dark. And I mean, that's one of the things that we as a church family particularly need to look after. Single girls walking to cars look, I don't want you to go out. We've got a number of men here who will happily walk with you. And so, yeah, that's a concern though. Caring for our church body pastorally, there'll be lots of things to do. Must make sure we care for each other spiritually, emotionally, etc. That one's particularly looking after Fred and the retirement village people in the morning. Concerns about political interference, building delays, cost blowouts, and that's something that's worrying our church council as well. Just wondering if it would be good to not only make big banners for outside church, but then get them into pamphlets, letterbox drop Annandale, local businesses, and that's something we're very interested in doing. Concern of the extra jobs that will be required, envisaging and ensuring that we don't overtax the same people. And I mean, that is a real cost, a real issue, a real wariness that one group might be left with too much to do, and that being unfair. The move, it's fine. We all just need to pitch in and keep our eye on the goal. It's only 11 months, not enough space. We were almost out of chairs this morning here at church. Amount of setup, we'll grade on people. How do we handle this? I think it's great. Feel very positive about it. I think it's just what we need. It might be good for us not to be edgy for a while and to concentrate on love. Yep. Love is essential. Edginess is optional. What are my concerns? God is with us. What can I do to help? Anything you need me to do? Anything? Set up, welcoming, pack up. Setting up, packing up. Concerned that the load will not be shared evenly for a long period of time. Will my non-Christian guests like the atmosphere? I'm going to help by turning up to church 30 minutes early. Concerns, not enough space. How can I help? I'm not very good at coming up with ideas, but you tell me what to do. I'd like to help. That load one, a whole range of different points that you made last week, and we were encouraged going through those cards and feeling the vibe from you. There's definitely concerns in there. What about individuals? Uneven load question. Will there be equality? I want us tonight to address those issues. To how do we handle those kind of things logistically, week by week, and also the issue of finances as a church. And I want us to think theologically about the hard yards that we're going to have to do together as a church family over this next 12 months, because it's a very big project. And it's right that we share the load. And, I mean, I got here this morning at 8:03, and already there were 7 people here, and 5 of them are here again tonight. I mean, there are some people who have put in a long day in hard service, and we've got to get it right on sharing the load as we move forward, or we'll break. And we've got to get it right on the finances, or we'll break. And so it's just the nitty-gritty talk that has to happen at some point that I'm going to be giving tonight that flows out of last week, Jesus saying, I will build my church. What does that mean on the ground? We're going to read the Bible. You want to come with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 16. You need to have a Bible tonight. Serious things are going to be said. 1 Corinthians chapter 16, the Apostle Paul speaking. And normally when you read a letter from the Apostle Paul or any of the other apostles, the issues that he addresses and he presses on the audience that he's initially writing to, it's the same issues that he's addressing and pushing and putting to us. And he's speaking to the Corinthian church, and the Corinthian church down in southern Greece here, just near Athens. He's got a special relationship with the Corinthian church. Corinth is a port city, a busy, influential city like Sydney. Paul's written several letters to the Corinthian church. Previously, he'd set before them an appeal. He'd asked the church to work with him on a project. The project that he was interested in working with them on is funding assistance to poor Christians in Jerusalem, in the Israelite capital, Jerusalem. And the reason that Christians need to be funded in Jerusalem is because when they turned from Judaism to Christ, the personal cost is very high. They're facing social, economic ostracism. They're ecclesiastically excommunicated. They're cut off. They're nationally disinherited. And they're broke. No friends, no money, except those who are also broke in Jerusalem, the other Christians. And so the wider body of Christ, the Christians in Galatia, the Christians in Macedonia, the Christians in Corinth, is coming in to back them. 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 1. About the collection for God's people. Do what I told the Galatian churches to do. On the first day of every week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with his income, saving it up, so that when I come, no collections will have to be made. Then when I arrive, I'll give letters of introduction to the men you approve and send them with your gift to Jerusalem. If it seems advisable for me to go also, they'll accompany me. He said, I don't want to have a panic. I want to plan. And so I want you guys to plan, he says, so that first day of every week, you set aside some money. And you, in keeping with your income, those who've got more, give more. Those who've got less, give less. And then there's no panic. There's no big appeal need to be made at the end. It's regular. It's rostered. It's routine. It's once a week. It's proportional to income. It's amassed. Paul writes that in 1 Corinthians. Flick forward to 2 Corinthians now. 2 Corinthians chapter 8. And this is the passage that was read to us by Sam a moment ago, the passage we're looking at today. And Paul, here in 2 Corinthians, draws the Corinthian church's attention to the work that's already been done by the Macedonian church. Now, we're looking down here in Corinth, in southern Greece. Macedonia is up here in northern Greece. And so the Macedonian churches are the church of Philippi, the church of Amphipolis, the church of Thessalonica, the church of Berea. So they're the Macedonian churches. And Paul writes to tell the Corinthian Christians in Greece what it is that the Macedonians have done. Well, it's not really what the Macedonians have done. It's what God has done through the Macedonians. Now, see the first verse of 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 1. Brothers, sisters, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. God has given grace. God has been generous to the Macedonian churches. God has given them what they did not deserve. It plays out at several levels. First level, it's Christ coming to earth to pay for our wrong. We, you and I, humanity, have wronged God. We've said to God, get out of my space, leave me alone. I want to go my way, do my thing. God says, very well, but there's a judgment. There's a punishment. People under the judgment of God. And yet Christ comes in history and dies to pay that punishment. The first thing about grace is that there's a historical moment when Christ dies. That's God's grace. Him dying in our place. Second thing about grace is that it is an experience in an individual's life. Hearing the word of God, hearing what God has done in Jesus, and that moment in history being appropriated to my life. That moment in history becoming real in my life. I am at that point experiencing the grace of God. I'm at that point benefiting from the grace of God because I'm understanding that I was out of relationship with God, and now because of Jesus, because of that moment in history, now I am reconciled to him. And then the third thing I want to say about grace is that grace is being so changed by that experience. That God has been generous to me, that changes me. My life has changed to be characterized by generosity. That overflows into all sorts of aspects of our lives. And Paul says, brothers, you know what happened to the Macedonians. The Christians up there in the north of Greece have experienced God's generosity for them. And experiencing God's generosity for them, they have become generous to others. And particularly the ones that they've become generous to are the poor Christians over there in Jerusalem. And so verse 2 of chapter 8, out of their most severe trial, their overwhelming joy and their extreme poverty welled up into rich generosity. The Christians in Macedonia, they're not rich either. They're in poverty, they're in difficulty, they're in trial. And yet, because they have experienced the grace of God, they send assistance, they send money to the Christians over there in Jerusalem. I testify, verse 3, that they gave as much as they were able, even beyond their ability. These are people without much money, in poverty, giving more than they were able to, more than was fair, more than was reasonable, entirely on their own. They urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the saints. And they did not do as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord and then to us in keeping with God's will. So Paul, speaking to the Corinthian Christians, holds up the Macedonian Christians in the north as an outstanding example. Now, come back to us, to our issues here in Annandale, Christians in the media. Domestic issue here. It's not the issue of poor in Jerusalem, it's a different issue. We, as a ministry, have a goal as a ministry. Our goal as a ministry is that under God's hand and for Christ's glory, we exist to build the people of God, to reach the media, to reach the inner west, to impact the nations through the message of Jesus as Saviour and Lord. That's what we're about. Christ is about, I will build my church, and we are wanting to play a part in that, of building the church of Christ. And that plays out on the financial front of us wanting to fund the staff of the ministry, and also we're wanting to expand and improve the ministry facilities so that we can do it well, so that we have toilets that are indoors, and so that we have, I just want an office with a door, that's all. One door, so that I can have a private conversation. But there's all sorts of things. We want to be able to, we give money, we give finances
so that we can print, so we can do publicity, so we can do the general costs. And just to let you know where we stand, here's where we stand. And you're visiting tonight, you find out a bit about our church. Here's the nitty-gritty of where we stand as a church. Our budget for giving for 2008, December to January to December, is $274,000. That's our giving budget for this year, which means our giving budget for January to June is $137,000. Our actuals for June was $122,000, which means we've come in 15 grand behind where we were hoping to come at the end of June. That's in terms of paying for staff, paying for operating costs of keeping the ministry going, paying for the rent here, paying for the electricity, all those kind of things. Our average direct transfer gift of people who either do direct debit or direct deposit into the ministry's bank account is $50 a week. Some people give much more, some people give less, but we average amongst the people who give electronically $50 a week. Our average cash-in-box gift is between $10 and $5 a week. About half our members give by direct transfer, and about half our members give by cash-in-box. Now, when I say cash-in-box, I'm not actually meaning that there is always only $5 notes in the box or always only coins in the box. What I mean, often they're big notes, often they're $20, often they're $50, $100. But it's that I forget to put it in this week or I'm away next week. And so the average, if half our members give electronically, their average is 50, and half our members who give by cash, that average works out to be somewhere between 5 and 10 a week. In terms of our building fund, so to pay for the church building, tax-deductible building fund, in 2006, we together as a church pledged $800,000 over 3 and 4 years. We said, over and above the cost of paying the staff, we'd give $800,000. The Anglican Church came in and they've given us $1 million to help us with the building. That means that the cost of the building is 2.4, and that means the shortfall is 0.7 at this point. And so that's where we stand financially as a Christian ministry. The amount pledged in 2006, for 2006 through to 2009 for the building, by the 100 members who made that pledge in 2006, was $801,000. The number of people who've joined our church since 2006 is 90. And so we've had a huge increase in membership. Some people have left, but we've had a huge increase in membership across our two meetings since 2006. And the number of people who've joined the building fund since 2006 is minimal. So that's where we stand today in terms of the whole arrangement in terms of finances. Now, we've got, though, on the cards from last week, an expression of concern, and it's not the major thing, but as we approach this church building issue, a concern that with the setting up, packing up, concern that the load will not be shared evenly for a long period of time. Now, that's a concern that you could have, rightly, about the whole issue of pack up, set up, organisation, logistics, but it's also an issue, concern you could have rightly about the whole funding of this ministry. I think, to be honest, that's a concern. Now, I'm going to step out on a limb here and say, I think pastorally we have two groups within our church as a whole. And I'm not talking about if you're a visitor. I'm not talking if you've just come the last little while. But overall, there are two groups. And first group I want to talk about is the Macedonians in our church. And just as Paul said to the Corinthians, let me tell you about the Macedonians. I want to tell you about the Macedonians in this church. And you might, as I go through this, recognize yourself as a Macedonian. And if you recognize yourself as a Macedonian, feel an affirmation from God at this point. Here we go. Verse 1, 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 1. This could be you. Brothers, I want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. I want you to know about them. Out of their severe trial, their overflowing joy, their extreme poverty, it welled up into rich generosity. They testify, they gave as much as they were able, even beyond their ability. There are people in our church, and a lot of them were part of this church in 2006, who stretched in giving in that gift and pledge moment to pledge that $800,000. And a lot of them were pledging over and above their average gift of 50 a week to give extremely generously to build this building. And we actually had effectively in 2006 a referendum in that we discussed as a church body, will we build the building? And the members of the time said, yes. And I'm not just saying, yes, you're allowed to. I'm saying, yes, build it with my money. And here's how at our gift and pledge day it came out. Okay, that's this church, 2006. That's the Macedonians in this church. Now, $800,000, it's not that there's a whole lot of rich people. I mean, there are some people in our church who are wealthy, but there's a whole lot of uni students who made extraordinarily generous decisions. There's a whole lot of single-income families where they made extraordinarily generous decisions. A whole lot of single-parent families making extraordinarily generous decisions. Kids in the kids' church. I don't know if I should single him out, but my eldest son in 2006 pledged his whole pocket money for 3 years. He got a pocket money raise in 2007, and he didn't give the extra bit that he got in 2007... or the extra bit that he got in 2008, but as a six-year-old pledged his whole six-year-old pocket money for 3 years. And we have seen person after person having experiencing God's generosity to me choose to be generous. There are Macedonians in this church. And Paul writes to the Corinthians and say, I tell you about people who went beyond what they were able. I tell you there are people in this church who, I mean, young couple, expecting to go on trip to Europe, gave up trip to Europe in order to build this building. And person after person has made generous decision to work to make a generational difference to the ministry of Christ in this district in 2006. And if you are one of them, And you know, as I'm saying this about what happened 3 years ago, that I'm speaking about you, then feel the affirmation of God. Because Paul is saying, you did the right thing. Well done. But there are also here, and I want to speak now, to the what I'm going to call the Corinthians in this church. And having given a word of encouragement to the Macedonians, I now want to give a word of encouragement to a different group in this church. And it's a word of encouragement. It's not a rebuke, but it's a word of encouragement to the Corinthians in this church. Now, have a look with me at what Paul says to the Corinthians. Verse 6.4a on the handout sheet. We urge Titus, since he had earlier made a beginning, to bring also to completion this act of grace on your part. But just as you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in complete earnestness, and in your love for us, see that you also excel in this grace of giving. Now, this is not a word of rebuke for this church. This is a word of encouragement to this church. Matt Whitfield helped me see this really clearly. He made the observation, and I'm sure he's right after my conversation with him, but he described a section of our church as Corinthians. And what does that mean in these categories? Matt said, I've been in a number of churches, and been in this church, and there'd be some people who, yes, have been generous, who are Macedonians, but there'd be a whole different section of the church who've got hearts of stone. There's no generosity in them. There's no willingness to be serving Christ at that point. They've got hearts of stone, block hearts. And that is not this church. That is not our experience here. And here, there are people who've experienced grace, and now, having experienced grace, are overflowing in generosity and using their gifts in all sorts of ways, whether it be, in verse 7, faith, in speech, in knowledge, in earnestness, in serving, in teaching Scripture, in teaching kids club, in creche, in music serving, in all sorts of things, doing all sorts of things, in welcoming out the front, in packing up chairs, doing all sorts of things. And then Paul says to the Corinthians, now see that you excel in this grace of giving. How does he motivate them? He reminds them again of the grace of Christ. He reminds them again of what Jesus has done. For verse 9, you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, for your sakes he became poor, so that you through his poverty might become rich. First Paul held up to the Corinthians the example of the Macedonians. Now he holds up to the Corinthians the extreme example of grace, the example of the Lord Jesus. For there was no one richer than God, than Jesus. Jesus owned the universe. Through him all things were made. You cannot get richer than that. He owns everything. He is the one in whom the glory of God dwelt. And then he becomes nothing. You cannot get richer than Jesus, and then you cannot, at the point of Jesus' abandonment, you cannot be poorer than Jesus. From everything to absolutely nothing. He emptied himself, takes on the servant's role, becomes obedient to death, even on a cross. He is dead in Calvary. Do you know the grace of God? Have you experienced the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ? Some here may not. But the vast majority of our church, you know the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ. You know that though he was rich, he became poor. And why? That we who are poor, out of relationship with God, might become rich. And with that riches, whether it's the riches of serving in music or serving in setup or serving in welcoming or serving in the grace of giving, we might serve others. And then Paul says to the Corinthians, and I don't know, as I've gone through, have you seen yourself so far as a Macedonian? Some here will have. Or as I've been speaking, have you seen yourself as a Corinthian? My heart is willing, but I haven't followed through. Because that's what Paul is saying to the Corinthians. Look what he says, verse 8. I'm not commanding you, And this is not a command from me either. It's not a command from God, not a command from Paul, not a command from me. This is not a command. But the apostle of God says to you, if you're a Corinthian, if you're identifying with the Corinthians, he says, I want to test the sincerity of your love by comparing it with the earnestness of others. You're willing, but you haven't moved on giving. Paul says, I want to test you by comparing that with the generosity of the Macedonians. Whether it be the Macedonians of the first century or the Macedonians of here in 2006, test. Not a command to those 90, but it's a test that Paul lays before us. And then he says, and this is what Matt pointed out to me, verse 10, there's a genuine desire to do the right thing, but it's a matter of getting organized. And verse 10, here is my advice about what is best for you in this matter. Last year you were the first not only to give, but also to have the desire to do so. You've got the right focus. You've got the right heart. He's not rebuking their hearts like you might rebuke at some other church. Your hearts are being affirmed by God tonight. Now, though, verse 11, finish the work. Make good on what you pledged to do. Make good on what you intended to do but never got around to doing, so that your eager willingness to do it might be matched by your completion of it. So we called tonight's talk From Willingness to Completion. From having a heart in the right place, but then following through. I think there is a remarkable willingness in this church to support this ministry. It really is extraordinarily gratifying. As one of the leaders of this church, there are hearts that are so far in the right place. It is so exciting. But then there are Corinthians as part of our church, and the follow-through is rocky. The follow-through is inconsistent. The follow-through is uneven. And Paul had said to the Corinthians, there's a way to do it once a week. Reliable, set it aside, do the direct debit, do the direct transfer, be reliable. And now he says, actually, I want to put it to you. First, in chapter 1, in 1 Corinthians 1, chapter 16, I said, here's how you do it. You do the regular, you do it direct debit. You don't do it just when you open your wallet and if I've got anything tonight, and if I have, I put $5 in. If I haven't, if I've got 50, I put that in. You don't do it the unreliable. You do it the set aside, you do it the planned, you do it the regular. Now he says, finish it. Bring it to completion. There's a pattern of how you're to do it, though. His point is this service of others is to be done, see verse 11, according to your means. I want to unpack this in two ways. I want to unpack it in the way of serving with the whole pack up, serving with the whole setup, and on the finances. We were so overwhelmed with the number of feedback cards we got back last week. Do you know last week, I think in the history of this church, we got more feedback cards back last week than any other week ever. As you responded about your concerns and you responded about, I am willing to help. And it was just clear evidence that you are either Macedonians or Corinthians wanting to help. And so we've got such a big job and we want it to be according to your means. But some people, like in the morning, for example, we've got these couple of guys here from the retirement village. We're not going to put them on the setup roster because according to their means, they're not able to. We've got a couple of people here in pregnant women. And according to their means, really, we can't have them carrying the PA gear across. Do you know, just according to our means on some of the things for set up and pack up, some of us just aren't going to be able to help. And that's just life. But what's important is willingness, verse 12. See there, verse 12? If the willingness is there, then if you're willing, Then according to your ability, according to your means, you exercise the gift, and the size of one's gift is conditioned based upon the ability. Some of you are really strong, some of us are really puny. And so depending on how strong, depending on how able, depending on what you're able to do, the gift, verse 12, is acceptable according to what one has, not according to what one does not have. Our desire is not that others might be relieved while you're hard-pressed, but there might be equality. Paul wants there to be equality. Play that out two ways. If our budget is 274, if our January to June budget is 137, if our actual is 122, if our shortfall is 15, and yet our direct transfer gift is 40 to 50 a week from approximately half our members, and our cash in box gift is $5 to $10 a week from approximately half our members, that's not equality, is it? Or if operating expenses, cash box is 50 a week, building fund, 100 members, 801,000 is roughly 40 a week on top of that, we need to do something to help there be equality. And the fear of some of the commentators on the cards, and it wasn't everybody, but a couple of people, and well, a sizable minority, raised this fear. Oh, where have I put it? I'll just read it to you from my notes. The concern of the extra jobs that will be required and ensuring that we don't overtax the same people. In terms of the setup and the pack up and all that kind of thing, a phenomenal system has been worked out. There is this these two rooms next door, the Uniting Church Big Hall and the Uniting Church Little Hall, and they've got cupboards in there, and they've done this great work. See these key tags, all colour-coded on every cupboard, and then the colour code of the key tag matches the box colour. It's just fantastic. So there's purple for the creche, and there's green for this, and there's red for that, and there's just been fantastic organising that's gone on. And you can see that the first memo has come out on, I just put it in the handout sheet, just not for everybody to do this job tonight, but just so that you get the level of detail of organising and planning that has gone in to do the equality, to do the detail of what needs to happen. And as we've thought about it, we've worked out that in order to get through the year, I mean, if somebody's going to turn up at 8 o'clock in the morning and then be at church in the evening, that, we can't do that every week for a year. And so there's got to be a system. And we've worked out that 2 weeks is about right. And so we asked people to be on the roster for, I think, 4 people on setup and 4 people on pack up for 2 weeks. And then that should come up roughly once a quarter over the period that we go through. And we're going to ask everyone to be on that roster as we go through this for 2 weeks, once a quarter. That's how we thought we'd play it. If you don't want to be on the roster, can you tell us on the card tonight? But we thought we wouldn't go through the process of asking everybody again, would you like to be supportive? Because you've given us such a big vote of, I want to be supportive, on the cards last week. Do you know? So rather than wait again before starting it off, that's how we'll start next week. And if you want to dip out or something, just let us know on the cards there. Now, same thing with money. If the willingness is there, verse 12, the gift is acceptable according to what one has, not according to what one does not have. That 800,000, it didn't come just... Some of the people in our ministry, this Christians in the media ministry, the Annandale Community Church, are wealthy. And some of them, according to what they have been able to give big gifts. But lots of us are struggling. Lots of us are couples struggling on one income. Some of us are recent graduates. Some of us are uni students. Some of us are youth group kids. Some of us are Sunday school kids. And God's directive to the Corinthians, he says his pattern is to be equality. So there's equal sacrifice. So 14, check 14, 2 Corinthians 8:14. At this present time, your plenty will supply what they need, so that in turn their plenty will supply what you need. Then there'll be equality. As it is written, he who gathered much did not have too much, and he who gathered little did not have too little. Now, keep your finger in 2 Corinthians. That's a Bible quote from Exodus, second book of the Bible. Exodus chapter 16 and verse 14. Exodus 16, verse 14. It's Moses leading the Israelites through the desert towards the promised land. And as they're walking through the desert, they haven't got food. And on their journey, they stop. Verse 14 of chapter 16, when the dew was gone, thin flakes like frost on the ground appeared on the desert floor. When the Israelites saw it, they said to each other, "What is this?" They didn't know what it was. Moses said to them, "It is the bread the Lord has given you to eat." That's grace, isn't it? It's the bread the Lord has given you to eat. It's all from God. And that's worth us remembering as we think about money, as we think about time, as we think about energy. It's all from God. He's given it all to us. Everything in my wallet, that's from God. But my car keys and house keys, that's from God too. Everything I've got is from God. That's grace. The Israelites, they go out to collect what they need. So Moses said to them, "It's the bread the Lord has given you to eat." 16, "This is what the Lord has commanded. Each one is to gather as much as he needs. Take an omer for each person you have with you in your tent." The Israelites did as they were told. Some gathered much, some little. But when they measured it by the omer, he who gathered much did not have too much, and he who gathered little did not have too little. Each one gathered as much as he needed. Moses said to them, "No one's to keep any of it till morning." God's given it all to them. God's prophet has told them what they're to do with it. But some of them paid no attention to Moses. They kept part of it till morning. They acted selfishly. God had been gracious and then they acted selfishly. What happens to them? In the morning it was full of maggots and began to smell. There's a judgment. If you act selfishly with what God gives you in grace. Come back to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. God provides what we need, and then God expects us to act after his heart with what he gives us. And he says that to the man who has lots of money, the woman who's holding down a good job, lots of money. He says that to the uni student, and he says that to the person who's just getting by. In terms of administration, there is an administrative integrity that we need to have as we approach the whole subject of money. So verse 16 of 2 Corinthians 8, Paul says, "I thank God who put in the heart of Titus the same concern I have for you. For Titus not only welcomed our appeal, but he's coming to you with much enthusiasm and on his own initiative. And we're sending along with him the brother who is praised by all the churches for his service to the gospel. What is more, he was chosen by the churches to accompany us as we carry the offering, which we administer in order to honour the Lord himself and to show our eagerness to help." Key point, we want to avoid any criticism of the way we administer this liberal gift. For we are taking pains to do what is right, not only in the eyes of the Lord, but also in the eyes of men. Key sentence. We want to avoid any criticism of the way we administer this liberal gift. There is an opportunity when money is concerned for people to make slanderous imputations about the way it's handled. And Paul wants to avoid any criticism. When I first became pastor of this church and the Annandale Anglican Church, I had a meeting with the treasurer in my first week on the job. And I said to him, "Tell me about the state of the finances. I'd just become the minister. I was interested in the subject." And he showed me a spreadsheet of the expenditure. for the last 3 years. And I said, and is there a similar spreadsheet for income for the last 3 years? And he said, well, no. And I said, what's the system for income? And there was no decent paperwork for income. And we were wanting to take out a loan with the Anglican Church to sort out the building mess that we'd inherited. And so we, in order to take out a loan with the Anglican Church, you needed to provide the last 3 years of audited accounts. So I took the whole box of everything, like checkbooks, everything, deposit slips, collection forms, everything, and just went to this accountant and said, here, sort it. And he said, thanks very much. And he came back to us and said, we've gone through all the collections from the last 3 years, and the average collection per year is $10,000. And this is, I mean, there's only 15 people in the church when I became the minister at Annandale Anglican. The average collection per year is $10,000, and there's $8,000 missing from the last 3 years. Don't know what happened before 3 years, but a third of it's gone. And I talked to the treasurer, and he said, yeah, well, I'd come to the safe to collect it, and I'd take it home, and it'd be after hours, and so I'd put it under my bed. And then I'd be going out on Friday night and I didn't have the right money, and so I'd get something out of the bag and I'd meant to pay it back, and $8,000 had gone missing. I got a verse from God. We want to avoid any criticism of the way we administer this liberal gift. And I've got that horrific experience having become the minister of this church. And so we have policies on how we handle money as a church. Here's policy one, I never touch it. Our staff, the ministry staff, the pastoral staff, we never touch it. You have never seen me count the money because I never have. Why do I have that policy so firmly? Because I don't want it to be the slightest criticism of me and the way I handle the money. Next point. I'm not a signatory on the ministry's checkbook. Who are the signatories on the ministry's checkbook? It's the people that you elect and are appointed by the church council. It's the church wardens. And everything at the end of the year is audited. We have policies on how the money is... The people who give by direct debit, by direct transfer, it's really fantastic because the audit trail is really clear. It goes from your account to our account. It doesn't go through any hands. And so it's absolutely clear that it's handled right, the coming in bit of the money. What about the coming in bit of the money that's given in the box up the back? We have two people count it. Two people, not staff, count it. Both of them sign that they count it. They're not married to each other and they're not the same person every week. That's the policy. And then the money gets taken to the office and somebody else counts it again before it's banked. That's the point. If you ever see one person counting the money, tell them, say, stop. That is not the policy of this church. We want to avoid any criticism of the way we administer this liberal gift. You say, Dominic, you're thumping this pretty hard. I absolutely am. I don't know if you've read the story this weekend, but this shocking story from this bloke at Hillsong who's pretended to have cancer in order to get money, raise money. It's terrible and a massive embarrassment to that church. We want to avoid any criticism of the way we administer this liberal gift. I'd actually prefer it if we stopped our practice of putting comment cards in the money box at the back, just so that it's clear that what it is for money, and there's no, it's just open and clear, and the two don't get confused. And then Paul says, and we'll take questions and comments in a moment, of the collection administrators. Verse 22, we're sending them with our brother, who's often proved to us in many ways that he's zealous, and now even more so because of his great confidence in you. As for Titus, he's my partner and fellow worker among you. As for our brothers, they're representatives of the churches and an honour to Christ. So He's picked people to carry the collection who have an outstanding Christian reputation, so that there is no criticism of the way the gift is administered. And then, therefore, verse 24, show these men the proof of your love and the reason for our pride in you, so that the churches can see it. Now, we sit around Monday night at church council. It's our church council meeting tomorrow night. And that's strange. There's supposed to be a thing on the left-hand side there. I'll tell you what it was supposed to say. On the left-hand side, it was supposed to say operating expenses, direct transfer gift, 40 to 50 a week, cash give, 5 to 10. And then the building fund gift, approximately 40 a week. The number of people who've joined the building fund since 2006 is minimal. And the church council is tempted, as they sit around and make financial decisions about the future of this ministry, they're tempted to be critical of those who aren't giving or are giving the minor amount. And I want to say to the church council, they're Corinthians. Their hearts are willing. I want to say to the church council, I have a pride in them. Verse 24. And I want to say to you, show the church council the proof of your love, the proof of that test, and the reason for my pride in you, so that they can see it. Here's three application points. One, can I ask our home group leaders this week if you could have a discussion about what I've said tonight? A discussion about Macedonians, discussion about Corinthians, and just how that works out in the lives of our home groups, in our church family. Just what you take on. I just ask if we could have a discussion about that this week in home group. Secondly, if you're a Macedonian, be powerfully affirmed tonight. And I'm not talking dates, really. A lot of people, I've held 2006, but really I'm talking, if in your heart you know that you're giving above and beyond what you're able, you know that you're doing the right thing before the Almighty God, be affirmed by God. If you're a Corinthian and you know that your heart is willing, and I know your heart is willing, I can see it in what you're saying all over the place, but you've just not brought it from willingness to completion, then bring it from willingness to completion. You say, how can I do that, Dominic? I've got a thing I'd like you to do. Can you take out this slip? And the second slip in the handout sheet. Slug feedback. There's a note at the top to me and a note at the bottom to Marnie, our office administrator. And what Marnie is going to do is she's going to tear it in half when she gets it, and she's going to keep the bottom half and she's going to give me the top half. And so what I'd like you to do is to up the top write your name and then write, Dear Dominic, and interact with me on what I have said for me. And then say something to Marnie. What do I want you to say to me first? A thing to say to me, if you're a visitor, just tell us you are here. Tell us you are here, tell us your impressions, give us some sort of feedback interaction. And I think Steve's going to nip around with some pens. Does anybody not have a pen? I want everybody to be able to have a pen to be able to fill this in tonight, if you could. The second person here is somebody who's not grasped grace. Somebody who has not got what it is that the Lord Jesus Christ has done for us. And that might be something too. If you're that person, right, I really need to think harder about this grace issue. The third thing you could write in the note to me is, I think I am a Macedonian. Or some kind of interaction about how you're feeling as a Macedonian about what I've said. That'd be really helpful to write at this point. Maybe you're a Corinthian, to write down your interaction with me, the feedback that you've got for me, I don't want you to feel rebuked if you're a Corinthian, but I want you to feel encouraged to do what you know you want to do. Now, it could also be that there is an underlying issue, an underlying different spiritual issue, maybe a resentment, something we need to talk about. Write down, could we have a chat? That would be good to write down if that's you. But if you're a Corinthian, I want to suggest to you, down the bottom, dear Marnie, I'd like you to contact me to discuss how I can update my contributions to church, whether it's the operating giving or whether it's the building fund giving. And Marnie will contact you and she will do whatever it needs to be done to set up the forms so that we can all move from, if you like, willingness to equality, willingness to completion, and then there can be equality. That is pastoral word two from me as part of this series, pastoral word three, three nights on pastoral words. The climax of this series comes next week. I hope you'll come after the Engage conference. Those of you who are going to the Engage conference, I hope you'll make the effort to be with us on Sunday night, and it'll be my last night with you for 3 months. Now, do you want to ask a question or make a comment before we sing our last song? Questions, comments? Oh, where's the box? Oh, it's see-through. Yeah, the reason that it's see-through is because two reasons. We actually did at one stage have a non-see-through box and nobody noticed it was there at all. You know how I said to you that we've got a lower amount of cash giving than direct transfer giving? When we had the non-see-through box, it just got forgotten every week by everybody. And so we went I think we went 4 weeks in a row with no giving, do you know? And so we actually decided we needed to be more obvious. The other reason is we first had a see-through box, I think, when we were in a temporary location. And one of the problems with a temporary location is security. And so it's just really obvious if you pick up a box full of notes that you're knocking it off. And so it was helpful for us in terms of security. They were the reasons, I think. Maybe somebody else from our church council could add anything else when we made that. I can't remember when we made that decision 5 years ago or something like that. But that's why we did it, yeah. Sure, why don't we pass the plate around at collection time? That's a great question. Thank you for that. We made the call to not hold collections because we wanted church to feel really, really accessible for people who are just checking out Christ. And so we want people to be motivated by grace to give money, not because they feel awkward because everybody else in the row is giving money. And it's been a really, really good thing not holding a collection, because it actually has meant people have said, oh, mate, I've been coming to this church for 2 months and I haven't given any money. And it was because it wasn't kind of made obvious, it wasn't passed in front of me, so I've actually had to go and think about what I want to do and set up the direct transfer. And so it's actually meant that people have made thoughtful decisions about what they're doing rather than kind of pressured, awkward, peer group pressure decision and ending up just giving whatever's in my wallet without thinking about it. And so that was the decision we made there. Up the back. You know, Aaron, yeah, I think we've done the wrong thing there. I think that's a really helpful corrective. That I think it is a right and good reminder. As I mean, one of the awkwardnesses of holding a collection is that I might feel pressured, even, and we've wanted to be over the top friendly to people who are just exploring the possibility of relationship with God. But it's a great thing symbolically that I give my offering, it's brought up the front, we give thanks to God for the bread that he provides from heaven for me, and then we offer our gift to him. And there is something really important symbolically in that, and not just symbolically, but really. And I think you could accurately say that's been a problem, that we've lost that. And I'm not sure who's leading in prayer tonight, but if you could, thanks, Leanne. And if you're on the roster, that'd be a great thing to be putting in prayer time. Sam.
A lot of people might be giving to lots of other Christian organisations.
Mm-hmm.
So can you please throw that question towards the other? Can you just clarify why it's important to give to church?
Mm. Sure. I think... I mean, and this is an anathema to the arts graduates, but the accountancy people love this. I think you need to have a giving portfolio. And I think your giving portfolio should have three aspects in it. This is not just me speaking, it's God speaking. Aspect one needs to be, you need to be paying for what you receive in terms of the ministry that is provided to you in the family, in God's family that you're part of. And so... it's right. I'll give a couple of verses. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 is a passage. A minister, pastor, teacher of the Bible has a right to be paid. Chapter 9, sorry, 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Am I not free? Am I not apostle? Have I not seen Jesus? Are you not the result of my work in the Lord? Who serves as a soldier at his own expense? Who plants a vineyard and does not eat of its grapes? Who tends a flock and does not drink of its milk? Do I say this merely from a human point of view? Doesn't the law say the same thing? It's written in the law of Moses, do not muzzle an ox while it's treading out the grain. Is it about oxen that God is concerned? Surely he says this for us, doesn't he? Yes, it was written for us, because when the ploughman ploughs and the thresher threshes, they ought to do so in the hope of sharing in the harvest. The issue of don't muzzle the ox while it's treading out the grain, it's an image of a grain mill. And if you just imagine, the grain mill is the lectern, and there's a bottom stone and there's a top stone and an ox who pushes the top stone around the bottom stone, and then the wheat's put in the middle, and the wheat's put in the middle, and the ox, as it pushes and does this work, is able to eat the chaff that falls out around the side. And the point of that metaphor is that if you put a muzzle on the ox and the ox doesn't get to eat the chaff, well, the ox runs out of energy, and so the ox dies, so the ox can't make you bread anymore. And I don't really like that metaphor because it makes me out to be an ox. But it's saying if you don't feed your pastor, they won't be productive for you anymore. Do you see what I'm saying there? So point one, you've got to pay for those who provide the ministry of God to you. Secondly, you want to be supporting missions. You want to be partnering people who have gone beyond here to preach the gospel in other places. And so we really are serious as a church family about encouraging support for Matt and Louise George in Portugal, about encouraging support for Kingsley and Ronnie Box in Slovenia, for Paul Chung in China, all who've stood with us for Christ in various ways, for John and Kathleen Barrett in Burkina Faso. But also, we're keen about supporting the missionaries here who go and fight for Christ. Sophie Giles, as she goes and works as an ambassador for Christ in the communications faculty at UTS. For Leanne, as she fights for Christ in the communications faculty at Macquarie Uni, as Ed fights for Christ on the university campuses, as Samantha fights for Christ in the media workplaces. We want to support those missionaries in partnership beyond here. And then the third area that we're to support is to have compassion for the poor. And so we We explored that 3 weeks ago here in church when we saw that verse in 1 John chapter 3, verse 17. If anyone sees his brother in need and does not provide for his material need, how can the love of God be in him? And so three areas that we are to be giving to in our giving portfolio. Now, how much to each? I'm not going to pontificate on that subject. But I think each of us needs to make sure that there is something in each of those in our individual portfolios. Yeah. Timothy. Tim's asking, if I'm going for a personal loan, do I declare, and they ask me about my expenses, do I declare my gift to God as part of my expenses? Ooh. Certainly it is part of my expenses, in that I'm told by God to give him my first fruits. The Australian government won't let me do that, in that it takes the first fruits before it even lets me have an option of giving my first fruits to God. But certainly for me, the first thing that I do with my pay is pay first my giving to God and secondly my home loan. That's what I do with my money. My observation in dealing with the banks, and I've taken out several home loans now, has been that they ask you how much on your credit card, how much various things. I've never said to them that I'm giving 10%, giving 15%, giving whatever it is, the percentage that I'm giving. But I'm not sure they've ever asked me. If they asked me, I think I need to speak with integrity and speak honestly about what I'm doing, but I don't think they've asked me. So I don't think I've ever said that to them. But certainly, I mean, I'll tell you the most helpful thing that happened to me in terms of Christian ministry was 1994, and I was a student minister at a church, and the minister of the church explained to me how he worked his giving. And he said, first of the month, I get paid for the month. Second of the month, I have a direct transfer out of my check account into what I call my giving account. And he puts the money straight into his giving account second of the month. And then he says, the money in my giving account doesn't get spent on the groceries. It's marked for God. And then he had several direct transfers out of that account to various things. But that account balance, he had planned it so that it would gradually grow. And then when something was raised publicly that he wanted to give to, he'd actually planned for the ability to be spontaneously generous. And I just thought, that is fantastic. That's the kind of person I want to be. That's the kind of heart I want to have, to be ready and willing to be generous. And so in 1994, we opened a giving account. And do you know what happened? Revolutionized everything. From that point on, I've not felt guilty when money has been raised in church. Because I can speak freely and openly and honestly about the way I conduct my affairs on this. Because actually, I think I've had it in order for whenever it is since 1994. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. I'm glad you're concerned about it, because I was a bit concerned about it just after I said it. Let me go back and have another little go on that point. Just to refresh my memory, because I've had so many thoughts in the last 15 minutes. What were you and I both concerned about? That's right. Thanks for that, Ed. Yeah, that's the line that I thought, where did that come from? See, this is why question time is so helpful, because there's all sorts of overstatements, sloppy bits, and you could go home grumpy with me, and yet here am I thinking, oh, yeah, that was a silly thing to say. Here's the thing. Firstly, in terms of confidentiality, I don't know how much anybody gives, and neither does our church council know the how much anybody gives. That's not information that is discussed. They do know things like the information that I put up on the screen before, that it comes up on the, what do you call it, the on a church council we get given a... Yeah, it's an MYOB budget, profit and loss sheet. That's the word I was looking for. And the profit and loss sheet says direct transfer giving X amount of dollars, cash giving in box X amount of dollars. And so we've had this year $122,000 come in, and from memory, it says $100,000 given by direct transfer, $20,000 given by cash in box. The figures are something like that. And tomorrow night, the church council, having heard the answer to this question time, will no doubt check that I've got the numbers right. And if you're looking at your laptop there, Paul, you can call out and tell me. But it's that kind of order of magnitude. And sometimes questions have come up, like how many people are on direct transfer and how many people are on cash giving, and a broad general statement like 50-50 has been made by the treasurer. Do you know? And that's as far as the confidentiality goes. I want there to be equality. God wants there to be equality. The line in 2 Corinthians, the last verse in 2 Corinthians 8, where Paul says, show these men the proof of your love and the reason for our pride in you. I mean, a question is, who is these men? At one level, you'd say they are the administrators, Titus, his partner, the other bloke who is collecting the money. But it could also be that these men are the people that they're taking the money to over in the poor place in Jerusalem. And so when I read it, someone actually has to do the administration. And they're appointed by God to do the administration. In the case of the Corinthians, it's Titus. In the case of our church, it's our warden and the chairman of our finance committee. That's who it is in our situation. Simon. Sure. Mate, that's a great question. In terms of who's made the financial decisions, I mean, I should ask one of the wardens to come up and I'll just stand out of the way. but who's made the financial decisions? In 2006, we had a referendum as a church to move forward on this building project, and all our members there voted not just with putting a hand in the air, but actually making a financial contribution. So that was the decision that was made at the time. In each year, you elect the church council at the annual general meeting in March. They are the ones responsible for the money, the church council and the wardens. The Anglican Church has got lots of faults, but one of the things they actually have been, I think, quite clever on is a very clear delineation of responsibility. My job is Bible and prayer, and the church council and the church warden's job is money and property. Do you know, I only have the keys to the building as a courtesy of them. It's just their courtesy to give me the key. But they're the ones who are responsible for it. They're the ones responsible for the checkbooks. They're the ones responsible for the accounts, all those kind of things. They're responsible. When they talked about... when we were moving towards this building project, we made an announcement. I can't remember who it was, but somebody made an announcement in December last year, November, December, saying one of the things we were going to do is potentially take out a loan for up to $1 million, but we wanted to be able to have a line of credit to take out of a loan for $1 million to fund any shortfall that there might be. It was announced for 2 or 3 weeks in a row in church. A sign went up on the doors at church, and anybody who wanted to object to that should let the church council know, but also let the Anglican Church know who were the ones who were making that decision. So we were very open and public about... when I say we, they were very open and public about how that was to be done. And it's your money, and so you've elected them to administer your gift. And I reckon they're doing a great job. Going, going, gone.